healthy. Radio. Addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Woolly Bully. This is Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York State and author of Beating Obamacare 2014, standing in for the voice of liberty, Laura Ingraham. You can reach us at 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA, and you can tweet Laura at Ingraham Angle. This is Stand Up to the Bullies Day, Beat the Bullies Day, and that's why, of course, that wonderful music, Woolly Bully. So today, you and I are going to take on some of these bullies because we the people, we the American people, stand up to bullies. That's our way. So we're going to stand up to the bullies who are trying to close down charter schools like Bill de Blasio, the newly elected mayor of New York, and how about Eric Holder, the U.S. Attorney General? We're going to stand up to the bullies who are trying to take away our health care and ram Obamacare down our throats. We're going to stand up to the bullies who are trying to shred our great United States Constitution, including the commander and bully of them all, bully Barack Obama. And of course, we're going to take a look at those bullies halfway across the world who are seizing Crimea and bringing terror to that part of the world. Bullies, whoever they are, including the bullies, and we don't know who they are, who have seized those helpless passengers on Malaysian Airlines Flight 370. We have a special prayer for them in our hearts. You know, I miss the Ronald Reagan approach. When asked his view on Soviet aggression, they were the bullies of the 1980s, the Soviets. Reagan's response was, it's simple. We win, they lose. So stay with me because in the second hour, Ambassador John Bolton will give us his expert view on why our president, Obama, is just talking while Putin is doing the taking. How can we get America back in the win game? And we'll also have a real fighter for freedom on, Congressman Steve King. Despite his name, he knows that in our country, there is only one king. The rule of law is king. The United States Constitution is king. And he's going to be updating us on what the House Judiciary Committee is doing to rein in our lawless president. We may even use the I word a few times during that conversation. You know what that stands for. Holding the threat of impeachment over the head of this lawless president. Because he needs to get the message that in our country, the rule of law is still king, not Mr. Obama. We're also going to have a millennial drop by, a millennial politician from New Hampshire, to chat with us for a while about what's happening in the Granite State, the Live Free or Die State. I was there this weekend, and I really enjoy being there. So in preparation for this chat with this young politician, I've brought in two ferns with me today. Two ferns right here in the studio. So this is Betsy McCoy between the ferns. That's fun. Well, before we get on to charter schools and the bullies who are pushing these little kids out of charter schools, I did want to say something about a headline this morning regarding that Malaysian flight. There have been so many speculations about what happened to that airplane and the passengers inside. But in the headline this morning was news that residents of a tiny island in the middle of the Indian Ocean say they saw a low-flying jumbo jet 4 hours after the Malaysian airline Flight 370 vanished from the radar for the last time. And these residents live in a remote island. It's called Kudahuvadu in the Maldives. They don't see a lot of planes coming over. And so Now there is speculation that this plane was in the air for at least 4 hours after it inexplicably changed course. We still don't know what happened. But one witness who lives on that island said, "I've never seen a jet flying so low over the island before. I could even make out the doors on the plane clearly." So it gives us a little hope. Maybe this plane landed somewhere. Whatever we think happened, it's good to have a prayerful moment for those passengers. I keep thinking of those two infants on the plane with their mothers. Oh, I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother now. How to take care of a baby in a circumstance like that? Well, on to the bullies, because we're going to stand up to them. And Chris from Florida is on the line. Chris, what's on your mind this morning?
I just wanted to give a quick idea for the missing plane. Every jeweler in the country knows that the safest way to ship diamonds is a plain brown wrapper. You don't identify it. If you look historically at where large gold shipments move around the world, you got Malaysia. It is entirely possible that that plane held $2 billion in gold bullion headed to China under just normal circumstances. I think you might very well be seeing a theft. And, it, the pilots knew would know what was in the cargo hold. Those planes hold 70 tons of cargo.
Well, Chris, that's a very interesting idea. And my question to you is, are you suggesting that the pilots took the plane because of the gold, or that someone else on the plane took the plane because of the gold?
I think the pilots were hired to take the gold.
Well, time will tell. It's an interesting idea, and I thank you for calling. It is true that there probably was some valuable cargo on that plane. Interesting that the Malaysian government hasn't made any disclosures about the cargo, as far as I know. But we'll all keep these passengers in our prayers, and I'm glad you called with your idea. Thank you, Chris. Okay. So, on to a problem that we can actually solve. The Malaysian airline disappearance, unfortunately, we don't seem to have the information we need. And I'm not sure even that the U.S. government is getting all the information that there is to be had from the other players in this search. But again, that's speculation. But here's what happened Monday, much closer to home. On Monday, 19 parents in New York City who send their children to Success Academy. It's a great name. It's a Harlem charter school. They went to federal court to stop the newly elected communist-sounding mayor, Bill de Blasio, from denying them previously promised space for their school in a public school. Without the space, their children and 173 other children won't be able to continue at Success Academy this fall. So I started to think about this. You know, school bullying, it's a nationwide problem. But in this case, in the New York case, it's Mayor Bill de Blasio and his pals, the state head of the NAACP, Hazel Dukes, and the teachers unions, who are the bullies. And here they are targeting these middle school kids who are, by the way, 97% minority, 80% on school lunch assistance, and yet overcoming any disadvantages they're facing, these middle schoolers are the top dogs among schools everywhere. Listen to this. These middle schoolers are in the top 1% citywide in overall student achievement. The fifth graders rank third in all of New York State in math. And when I say third in all of New York State, they're besting really well-heeled, fancy suburbs in New York State, like Bronxville and Scarsdale, where kids have a lot of resources in school and even more resources at home. So why try to force the closing of this school? Well, de Blasio says He's raging against these schools because they get private donations from, quote, very wealthy Wall Street folks. And Hazel Dukes, who's head of the NAACP in New York State, she blasted the lawsuit claiming it was, quote, an outrageous and insulting attempt by Wall Street hedge fund managers to hijack the language of civil rights. Excuse me, Hazel Dukes, but you're the one playing the race card for political gain, by the way, and sacrificing these minority kids. It's really hard to believe that anybody would buy their side of the story. Let me give you one example. I looked at the performance of some of the other charter schools in New York, including one up in the Bronx. Now, this is a school located in the same building as a ordinary public school, what they call a district school. And here are the kids in one side of the building in the charter school who are ranking among the highest in the state in reading and math. And the kids sitting in the next classroom in the district school, only 3% of them can pass the state English test. Can you imagine? Same bricks and mortar, but a world of difference. And here we have the politicians trying to close down the charter schools because the unions, their allies, want to monopolize education. It's a real statist approach, but very unfair to the kids. And by the way, we've got Eric Holder doing the same thing in New Orleans, where almost all kids attend charter schools or use vouchers to go to private schools. And here Eric Holder is moving in with the Justice Department claiming that he's got to enforce desegregation. The parents, almost all minority, are saying it's less important to us to have racial balance than to have our children in a school we choose because it actually educates our kids. So there you have it. Holder actually had to give up because the parents were so forceful. And that's what happens when you stand up to a bully. Often the bully has to give up. It's a good lesson for us, especially when we're defending our kids against politics as usual, and especially the bossism of the unions. I'm going to be back after the break. This is Betsy McCoy, Between the Ferns today, standing in for Laura Ingraham on your healthy radio addiction. You can reach us at 855-40-LAURA.
The Laura Ingraham Show. Call the Laura Ingraham Show, 1-855-40-LAURA.
Welcome back. Welcome back, Bubba. Glad you stayed with me. This is Dr. Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York State and author of Beating Obamacare 2014, standing in today for the voice of liberty, Laura Ingraham. And you can reach us at 855-40-LAURA. And you can tweet Laura at Ingraham Angle. And we've got David on the line. David from New York. What's on your mind, David?
Okay. I wanted to take issue with a few things that you said about charter schools.
Okay.
Now, I live Long Island, but I have a couple of nieces and nephews that live in New York City and would be affected by this. My problem with this charter school is that they're very selective about who they let in. So when you compare them against the public schools, they have to accept everyone, people who hardly speak English, people with learning disabilities, people with really bad parenting situations. It's not really a fair comparison.
Well, David, wait a second. I'd like to just jump in right there and address your very important concern. I'm glad you called. The fact is that New York allocates seats in charter schools by lottery. So, in fact, 97% of the kids in these schools are minorities, 80% are on lunch assistance, 15% have disabilities, and many, many start school unable to speak English. So, if your point were correct, I would totally agree with you. But the fact is, this is a lottery.
All right, listen, I've heard that lottery argument before. First of all, it's not a lottery that's open to everyone.
It is open to everyone.
No. Wait. Hold on. There is a very limited number of slots.
That's
because
true.
There's a very limited number of slots. Also, there is an issue of the fact that most of the parents that put in for this, let's face it, they're more motivated than the average parent in New York City.
And they should be penalized for that?
No, I'm not. What I'm saying is that's unfortunate. But why is it that the other children have to suffer, the ones that don't have the motivated parents, the ones that get left behind?
Well, you know what?
I
feel for you. I'm really glad you called, and I feel for you on that, because the fact is every child should get a good education. But if certain parents are so motivated to move their kids to a better performing school, and it is a public school, why shouldn't they be allowed to do that? I think every parent should be able to choose the best possible school for their kids. And why punish them because some kids, unfortunately, don't have interested parents? I'm glad you called, David. We'll continue this conversation another time. We also have Tom on the line. Tom,
hello,
what's
Betsy?
On your mind? What's on your mind?
I would like to say thank you very much to the Senate of New York for turning down the DREAM Act and not giving our hard-earned tax dollars to people that have broken our laws. We have children in this country that need tax dollars and hard-earned American dollars to teach them and get them through college, and to spend it on people that have broken our laws is just not a very good spending of our money.
That's a very important viewpoint you just expressed, Tom, and I'm glad you called. Now, standing right next to me in the studio is a millennial. And by the way, she's an expert on this. Her name is Mary Linda Garcia. I got to know her a bit this weekend when I was up in New Hampshire, one of my favorite places, because it's the live free or die state. And Mary Linda is currently a state rep, but she's running for Congress in the 2nd District in New Hampshire. And she came into the Fox studios this morning to talk with Fox and Friends about what it's like to be a millennial politician. So I'm going to introduce her and hear a few words from her, and then after the break, we can continue this. But come on over here, Mary Linda, because you've got to be standing between the two ferns. That's part of the deal. We're keeping up with Zach on that. So let's have a between the ferns discussion. What do you think is the most important thing millennials ought to keep in mind?
As I mentioned this morning, and thanks for having me, by the way, good to see you again, is that there's still time, you know, to solve the problems we have in our country. We grew up.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, I know, right? That being said, I think we have a sense of urgency, that's for sure. One of the challenges to our generation is that...
We're coming up on a hard break.
Oh.
So one sentence, and we'll be back after the break. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram on your healthy radio addiction. Stay with us. We've got a lot to talk about with the millennials and between the ferns.
Call Laura now, 1-855-40-LAURA.
Glad you stayed with me, friends. This is Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York State, author of Beating Obamacare 2014, standing in for the great voice of freedom, Laura Ingram. And I'm here talking with Mary Linda Garcia from New Hampshire, the great live free or die state. Some of us call it the granite state, too. Mm-hmm. And she's running for Congress, and I asked her to come in and chat about what it's like to be a millennial in politics. And I have to start with this question, Mary Linda. Did you see that skit that Zach Galifianakis had with the president between two ferns?
I am aware, yes.
Right. And what'd you think?
I thought it was pretty clear that, you know, the success of Obamacare relies on young people signing up and basically subsidizing, you know, the older generation. And since that's the enrollment isn't going as expected, according to the administration, or as well as possible, I think Obama is just using whatever type of medium he thinks will help him better connect and convince and basically sell and market his product, which, by the way, young people aren't enthusiastic about. I mean, think about it. This is something they're being forced to buy that they don't necessarily want, and they may be fined if they don't. So his success depends on them actually enrolling, so I think he's just using every possible medium to do that.
And how about the lies? You know, a lot of people say, well, it wasn't presidential for him to do this skit. I thought, presidential, schmezidential, that's not the issue. The issue is what he said during the skit was a lie. Do you remember when he said that young people could buy this health plan for the price of a cell phone?
I mean, maybe it depends on which phone you're buying, but let's not forget that this entire ACA started off, it was based on a lie. You know, the premise, of course, need I repeat it, but if you like your plan, you can keep your plan. If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And then, of course, the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, just basically admitting that we don't know what it is, you know, but if we pass it, then we'll read it. So, you know,
amazing, right?
Expect?
Amazing. It must be amazing to your generation. But I'm focused on this one lie in the skit because he said, you can get this for the price of a cell phone. So I did a little research. And the fact is the cheapest plans are twice as expensive as the cheapest cell phone contract. I mean, literally. And the fact checkers have gone along with this. This was definitely not true. And of course, even then, you don't have a $3,000 deductible on your cell phone contract. The first call is paid for, whereas with the silver and bronze plans, it's $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 or more deductible. Right.
Yeah, I think it's just pretty clear he's trying to use every avenue possible to market his product and sell it to the younger generations that aren't buying it.
But there is a difference between good salesmanship and just outright lies.
I didn't say he was doing it well.
Right.
I just said he's doing it.
Right. In fact, I came across in the news today, TV pitchman Kevin Trudeau sentenced to 10 years in federal prison for bilking customers. Mm. He went on television, right? And sold them a book for $39 that claimed to be the easy route to weight loss. Yeah. In fact, it was a grueling 500-calorie-a-day diet. They sent him to prison for 10 years,
wow.
And all his victims suffered was a $39 loss for a book. Mm. Think about that compared with losing your health plan.
Mm, for sure. You know, this administration has made it clear that they pretty much say whatever they want, whenever they want to. We've seen that from the Benghazi incident to health care to, you know, the IRS scandal. They only actually assume a pretense of accountability when they're confronted about it, let's say, on national TV. So,
but, you know, the fact is that if the president said the same things he said on Between the Ferns, mm-hmm. If he said it and he was in the private sector selling a health plan or a car or anything else, he'd be convicted of fraud and sent to the penitentiary.
Well, that's the issue. Millennials don't think there's much accountability in government and public office, and I think he's a perfect example of that.
Well put, Mary Linda. Now, let me ask you something else. The president is also using sports stars. It's March Madness time. So he's gone to the NCAA and he's asking all these sports stars to endorse Obamacare. Your thoughts?
Again, it's kind of more of the same. Use pop culture, use celebrities. In other words, it doesn't matter what the actual quality or, you know, what actual policy it is he's trying to promote. He just wants to see it successful because this is his signature piece. It's obviously been bungled. It was disastrous from the start, and it's crippling, you know, to so many people, millions of people across the country. I see it in my own state. People, their premiums rising, being unable to afford what is supposed to be affordable health care, people being kicked off the plans they liked. And with our, you know, we have 26 hospitals in my state. 10 of them are out of network under
That means
Obamacare.
You can't go to the local hospital.
Yeah.
I remember Americans for Prosperity had an ad up in your mm-hmm. state featuring Donna Marzullo,
yes.
who who couldn't go to either of the local hospitals. She has a serious health condition, and suddenly she can't get the care she needs.
Right. I wouldn't consider that a reform or a triumph legislatively. So, you know, I think the president is sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel. You know, when you turn to sort of pop culture and media and celebrity to try to just, I guess, have a groupie effect, you know, about your signature piece of policy, that's usually shows that it's not substantive. You know, it doesn't have any well-formed, well-thought-out substantive policy underneath it.
Right. The president kept telling us that it was a good product. But in fact, what we're learning is that those Obamacare exchange products are really the substandard plans, because you can't use the doctor you've mm-hmm. come to rely on. You can't use your local hospital you've mm-hmm. come to depend on. Mm-hmm. And if you have something like MS or certain forms mm-hmm. of cancer, you can't even get the medications mm-hmm. you've come to rely on. I spoke with a doctor from Georgia the other day, a neurologist who specializes in MS, and he said that 6 out of 10 most important drugs for MS patients aren't covered under the Obamacare exchange plans offered in his state.
Yeah, it's true. You know, as elected officials, we're supposed to be promoting and trying to achieve better health care for more people at a lower cost. And Obamacare is basically doing, you know, on two of those, it's more costly and it's for less people in so many ways. I mean, you're taking people, again, off plans they were happy with and pushing them onto substandard plans that they can't afford. I mean, that is not a reform. That is not success.
And not only that, not only does it lower your standard of care and put government in charge of your care, it takes away something as precious as life itself, your liberty.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There's been a lot of talk, and this is a big thing amongst millennials as well. They're really concerned about this NSA scandal, the IRS scandal. And, you know, there are cyber areas of, you know, that cyber security effects that we voluntarily participate in, right? If you're online, if you have a cell phone, if you're using online banking, all of these things, you assume an amount of risk. But when the government compels you, you know, forces you to sign up on healthcare.gov, or, you know, then takes your information from the IRS and uses it against you and assaults your freedom of mm-hmm. speech and freedom of expression, that is really, really concerning. And I think that's not lost on millennials.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And the fact is that I have to say, the people of New Hampshire, I am so impressed. They are really standing up for their freedom on Obamacare. Americans for Prosperity has held many, many events in New Hampshire. I know last night they featured several patients who had lost their doctors or lost their health plans because of Obamacare. And I know that it's been a very lively debate in New Hampshire, and you've been one of the participants.
I have. I've been in the state government now as a state representative for 8 years. This is my 8th year, my 4th term. And I've been working on health care reform issues, trying to achieve regulatory reform to help the specialty care sector develop, also working in pricing transparency to make that process more consumer-oriented and also more closely tie the dollar to quality. So my frustration is that the federal government is being adversarial in the policies it's promoting. It's basically coming in and taking all the reforms, you know, me and my colleagues have been working on and just saying, you know, wiping them away and saying this is what the deal is going to be. And they wreak havoc on our healthcare ecosystem and don't take, you know, us into consideration as though we're a unique state. You know, we don't have the same problems and the same population that California does. We just don't. So mm-hmm. We're closest to the citizens. We're closest to what our challenges and problems are. So we're able to more effectively achieve those solutions. So that's why I'm running for Congress. That's what I forgot to add. So I'm running for Congress because my Congresswoman, currently Custer, is not voting in such a way that helps us in the state improve and develop. Instead, she's causing being complicit and an advocate and a champion of more federal overreach. You know,
right.
The federal government is becoming an obstacle to our development.
Maryland, it's that one-size-fits-all government thinking. Mm-hmm. Washington knows best. Mm-hmm. They're trying to force everyone into the same size health plan with exactly the same benefits, whether you want them or not. And we've learned over 200 years in America that one-size-fits-all doesn't work
right.
for Americans. We want the freedom to choose the health plan that's best for us and our family, or or the freedom to buy only those products we need.
Absolutely. And it's actually the antithesis of what America is and how we became the exceptional country we are today.
Well, let's take a call from David in Florida. David, what's on your mind?
Hi, ladies. My question is, I'm from North Carolina. I'm in the 5th District. My Congress lady is Virginia Fox, and she's on the Appropriations Committee, and I've asked her this question, and I really haven't gotten a clear answer. Why don't they just not fund Obamacare and fund these ridiculous political things
David, you have the right question. I am so glad you asked it. And let me just say very quickly, because we're coming up to a break, that James Madison explained in Federalist 58 that the most powerful tool that freedom lovers have to defeat oppression is the power of the purse. Unfortunately, parts of this law were funded ahead of time, but we can put a stop to it at any time. For example, the president has just asked for $600 million more to continue tinkering with the technology of the website. That is just pouring more good money after bad. So thank you for your question. It's a very important one, and members of the House of Representatives have to stop providing the money for Obamacare. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for the voice of freedom, Laura Ingraham, on your healthy radio addiction. And stay with us after the break, because we've got a lot more on Obamacare.
Look at that.
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Hey, young blood. I can't get you out of my mind. I took a look at how I was fractured. I tried to walk, but I was left.
Call Laura now. 1-855-40-LAURA.
You took me for a...
Welcome back, Bubba. This is Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York State and author of Beating Obamacare 2014, standing in for the Voice of Liberty, Laura Ingraham. You can reach us at 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA, and you can tweet Laura at Ingraham Angle, or you can reach me at BetsyMcCoy.com. We have John Mitchell from Florida on the line. What's on your mind, John?
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to comment on the Obamacare matter that you're discussing, and to remind us all that none of the elected officials who voted for this abominable care are subject to it, and none or most federal employees are exempt from it and can continue their own federal government health care plans, which are totally comprehensive, some of which even cover personal legal fees.
I am so glad you called in about this, John. This is a real public service you're doing, because the fact is the Obama Health Law, the Affordable Care Act, as written in 2010, specifically required that members of Congress would have to enroll in these health care exchange plans. But members of Congress got cold feet. It was going to be affordable for everybody except them. So last August, the president weaseled through the Office of Personnel Management a special deal, an insider deal for members of Congress, so that when they sign up for these plans, it's almost entirely paid for by us, the taxpayers, even though members of Congress earn a base pay of $174,000 a year. Nobody else in that income range would be able to get a subsidy, but they're getting it. Thank you so much for calling, John.
Thank you for listening to my comment. I appreciate it. I love your program.
Thank you. You're so nice to call. The fact is, folks, Obamacare is dying. It is on life support. The president himself is dismantling it, lawlessly hacking off provisions as they become unpopular, frankly, in order to minimize Democratic losses in the upcoming elections. And health reform be damned, as far as he's concerned. politics takes precedent. So the employer mandate is gone for mid-sized companies. The penalty for people who don't have insurance is virtually gone. The requirements for essential benefit packages are gone. Suddenly the president has decided we can keep our substandard plans if we want them till 2016. So the law is almost entirely eviscerated. And after the break, we're going to have one of the really finest people in the United States Congress, Representative Steve King from Iowa, on. And he's going to be talking about what the House Judiciary Committee is planning to do or considering in order to stop the lawless destruction of the rule of law by this president. So be sure to stay with us after the break for that. It's going to be a very exciting conversation with Congressman Steve King. But you've heard it here first. Obamacare is dying. It is on life support, and it is dying by the president's own hand. He's destroying his signature legislation for short-term political gain. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for the Voice of Liberty, Laura Ingraham. This is your healthy radio addiction. Call us at 855-40-LAURA. And
radio addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Glad you stayed with me, Bubala. This is Dr. Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York State and author of Beating Obamacare 2014, standing in for the Voice of Liberty, Laura Ingraham. You can reach us at 855-40-LAURA, and you can tweet Laura and Ingraham Angle, and you can reach me at BetsyMcCoy.com. And the great news is you can also reach one of the most influential and principled members of the House of Representatives, Congressman Steve King from Iowa. And I've asked him to come on because he's a member of the House Judiciary Committee, and he has been leading the fight for the rule of law. Congressman King, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me back on, Betsy. It's nice to be in the battle with you.
Thank you. Side by side, fighting for the endurance of our United States Constitution. So let's get right with it. The Congress recently suspended the debt ceiling, and as I recall, the Constitution says only Congress has the power to borrow. In fact, until 1917, when that debt ceiling was created, the president had to come to Congress hat in hand each time he wanted the Treasury to borrow. So how do you explain suspending the debt ceiling and giving him unlimited borrowing authority for a period of time?
Well, I thought it was a mistake to do that, obviously, and a good number of us spoke against it and voted against it. In fact, there were only 28 Republicans that voted yes on that. And quite a lot of them were committee chairs that had a gavel, and that seems to rally them around the leadership. But the rationale on it, apparently, and is what they said, was that we needed to take the debt ceiling off the table. We couldn't face another government shutdown. We need to just focus on Obamacare between now and November. And if we do that, then we might win a majority in the Senate and be able to put some things on the president's desk. That's the rationale. And I argued that instead we needed the leverage. It was the last piece of leverage that we have between now and the election. And if the debt ceiling, if it came down to crunch time on the debt ceiling, do that in a short term for a small amount, a defined amount, and extract some kind of fiscal responsibility into the bargain. And, the very people that made this decision to move this debt ceiling are the ones that had been arguing all along that the highest leverage and the biggest things that you get done with a spending president happen with the leverage of the debt ceiling. So they decided, we'll give it up, and it was illogical to me to move that forward till, I believe the date is March 15th of next year.
Yes.
More than a year with no debate, no cap, and he can borrow money and we can't audit the Fed, and he can backfill whatever accounts that he used extraordinary measures to go into the last time we got into this point. I am very troubled by this. It's nothing that we're going to be able to push, at least between now and November. If there's a changing of the guard in the Senate, I don't know that we can withdraw a debt ceiling increase with that. I think that would be politically very close to impossible to do, Betsy.
It's very disappointing to see so many members of Congress act only on immediate political expedience and forget that we have entrusted our Constitution to them, that they take an oath to uphold it when they assume office.
Well, yes, and the president seems to be the one that's forgotten that most consistently and conveniently for him, I would add.
Oh, I fully agree.
I'm sure. you've done it effectively and vocally and print and in any kind of audio and video that I can recall, Betsy. You've been one of the stalwarts on this. It's been real clear. I am troubled that the president has multiple times violated the Constitution, and we'll continue to talk about that, and we have. But the level of outrage that should be immediate among everyone who has taken an oath to uphold the Constitution, especially those of us in the Congress who are charged with the Article I legislative authority, don't reach that level of outrage. When I recall that on the day after the president unconstitutionally delayed the employer mandate mm-hmm. for a year, the discussion was among Republicans in the House was, we're going to bring legislation, I'll use these words, it wasn't theirs, to conform to the president's order, thereby making it constitutional and legal. Well, by definition, that would be right. If the president says, I'm going to try to change the law unconstitutionally, if Congress conforms to that request, it is constitutional. But they were seeking to do that because people wanted the employer mandate delayed. And I said, this needs to be a constitutional issue. We need to push back and tell the president, you cannot do this. It's unconstitutional to amend Obamacare by the executive pen. Only Congress can do this. And there were a handful of us in the Congress that took that position vocally, but not the leadership who made the argument political rather than constitutional.
Well, and just to keep everyone updated, just 2 weeks ago, the House of Representatives voted 250 to 160 to postpone that tax on anyone who doesn't have insurance. It's called the Shared Responsibility Tax, which was upheld by the United States Supreme Court because they called it a tax. Everyone remembers that. But the fact is, the House realized that so many people would remain uninsured. Only 10% of the uninsured are choosing to sign up for these Obamacare plans among those who are eligible. So they voted to delay the tax. The president said he would veto it. And yet, just a few days later, he literally issued regulations that do away with this tax for almost everybody.
You know, it's almost the message you get from that, and those kind of things have happened multiple times.
Many times.
The president has said, I'm going to change Obamacare, and Congress says, we're going to pass a law that does that. The president says no, and then I'll veto it if it gets to my desk, and then proceeds to do so by unconstitutional executive decision rather than accepting the help from Congress that is constitutional. It's almost as if the president is saying, I'm Article II, I'm going to take care of all of the executive authority, and by the way, I'm going to take your Article I legislative authority, and don't be sticking your nose in your business, Congress, because I've taken your business away from you, Congress. I'm not going to tolerate your input.
Well, that's
Isn't
what's
that
so dangerous about it, Congressman, because the fact is, not only is he governing by fiat illegally, but he's underscoring it. He's making a point of it. He's not simply doing it because it's politically unavoidable. He is insisting on grabbing the powers that by the Constitution belong to Congress alone. And I should think that members of Congress in both parties would be very worried about the precedent that this sets for the future. We are seeing the rule of law literally ripped away from us.
We are, and we're seeing the Constitution shredded. And we've had a number of hearings in the House Judiciary Committee, and we moved a couple of bills on the floor just last week, as I recall, to address this. throughout these hearings, we've had top constitutional scholars, among them Professor Jonathan Turley, who is a self-professed liberal who supports the Obamacare, I guess I should say Obama's policies, to be careful about how I quote him, and he's voted for Obama, but he is very troubled by what the damage this is doing to the Constitution, and he says we have reached a tipping point. I agree with all of that, and of course I would go further with my analysis of this, but throughout the hearings and the top scholars that we brought forward, And I keep probing into that. Is that what do we do? What's the solution? And when it's really all analyzed, they haven't come forward with a solution that resolves this to the question I have. And that is, yes, there is a provision in the Constitution to bring the president under the kind of thing that Bill Clinton was brought under. We know that won't happen. It won't happen to Harry Reid's Senate. And we know through the government shutdown that we aren't going to be able to control this president through the purse strings. So then the look is to go to court and for Congress to grant itself standing so the courts don't throw out a suit delivered by Congress. And but each time we talk about getting a court to referee the dispute between the executive and the legislative branch of government, there's a presumption there that Barack Obama would honor and respect a court decision.
Right, but let's make one thing clear, Congressman. What you've said is absolutely true. That's why I had you on. You're a wonderful expert and a real lover of freedom. But one of the things at stake, I believe, in this fall election is this. If the Republicans, I'll put it differently, if the devotees of freedom can win a majority in the United States Senate, they can then hold the threat of impeachment, the sword of impeachment over this president's head, and the new Senate Majority Leader can take a walk up Pennsylvania Avenue and have a chat with the president about impeachment. No one would want to put the nation through impeachment, but a realistic threat of impeachment might possibly rein in this president.
Boy, it might possibly, but I carry a significant disappointment in how Republicans ran that in the United States Senate back in 1998.
Well, it was a different
issue.
It was
early 99.
That was a criminal act,
issue.
Right? And kind
was.
Of a tawdry issue, whereas this is going at the very heart of our Constitution. Congressman, can we take a call from Jeff in Nevada on impeachment?
Happy to.
Jeff, what's on your mind?
Plenty, of course, and thank you for having me. I know a lot of people say, well, no, there are all of these reasons why we can't get into impeachment or start impeachment proceedings. Fine, I won't go there. I would ask the congressman to make a list. You know, the Declaration had a list of offenses. I would ask the congressman to make a list of, what could, as if it were articles of impeachment, but just a list of everything this president has done that would be considered impeachable, because I can't even keep track of all the things this guy has done.
Right. You mean a list of high crimes and misdemeanors.
could we have a list, and then they could be numbered, and then we the people could look at them and we could talk about, what about number two there? What about number 537? That one. Look at that one.
Well, what do you say, Congressman King? Because your Judiciary Committee hearings have done some of that, right?
We've done some of that, and there's some of that out there in the press, but I think this is actually a very good idea, and I didn't think about numbering them so we could reference them by number, but what I have been in the process, and it's been a long process, of trying to write up a resolution that embodies all of these constitutional violations, and they keep moving and changing, and I haven't been able to keep up with it. About the time I think I'm caught up with it, he pulls another one, and you would think it's a simple copy and paste and throw another one in there, but it's just so complex, and there's gray area along the way. And of course, he's targeting these that are gray area and those that he can get away with politically. But I think that this is a responsibility we have, and I think we should be bringing this forward. So I'm going to do my best to get that out and get it published. We just had a website that had these listed on it, and then we could start with the numbering and the identification.
That's
and
right.
The labeling in a way that's
Congressman,
better than we are right now.
That's a great idea. I hope you'll do it. Jeff, thank you so much for calling. We're going to take a break. This is your Healthy Radio Addiction. And when we get back, we are going to discuss these high crimes and misdemeanors. We still have Margie on the line. We have a lot of calls and a lot of hot topics. Stay with me. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for the voice of liberty, Laura Ingraham, your Healthy Radio Addiction.
People talk, but we don't listen.
Laura Ingraham Show. Call the Laura Ingraham Show, 1-855-40-LAURA.
All the more a pair of underwater pearls than the oak tree and its resurrection first.
Welcome back, Bubba. This is Dr. Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York State and author of Beating Obamacare 2014. Glad you stayed with me. And we've got Margie on the line. Margie, what's on your mind?
Hi. Well, I just wanted to say, I had a comment that I think a lot of patriotic Americans are becoming depressed, despondent over the fact that we can't get accountability for so many of the issues that we talk about day in and day out. It's depressing that, that we have a president that seems to be a dictator, and we can't get any accountability for what we would call crimes. And like you talked about earlier, lying and leading the public on the Obamacare, which would be a crime in the private sector, in the business sector. And then we have a president supposed to represent us with Putin. And really, there's so many similarities between the narcissistic dictatorships. I don't understand. I think a lot of patriotic Americans are just, like, fed up. They don't know what to do anymore. They're so glad that there are people like you and the senator you just had on that are still working on it, but it seems that we can't get accountability.
Well, we can. I totally sympathize with what you're saying. We've all felt those moments of heartache, but the fact is our system of government allows us to take control back from a lawless president like President Obama. The elections this fall are going to be critical because, as I pointed out, if freedom lovers can win a majority in the Senate and hold the majority in the House, they will be able to rein in this president. And that's exactly what the Constitution envisioned. You know, James Madison would be rolling over in his grave watching what the president is doing. We were talking a few minutes ago about giving these special perks to members of Congress. And I remember in Federalist 58, when Madison warned that the minute Congress passes a law that exempts itself from requirements that are imposed on the public, well, that's the beginning of the end of freedom. So we have to elect members of Congress who truly believe in those principles, that they must live by the laws they impose on the rest of us. And members of Congress who will read the legislation before they vote on it. I'm looking at this Obama health law sitting here on my desk, all 2,572 pages. And it's so shocking that they would consider passing a law like that. In Washington, the word comprehensive, which they apply to health reform, immigration reform, tax reform, it's become a synonym for unread. Comprehensive means unread, and we shouldn't allow them to pass any more laws like that. So thanks for calling, Margie. I was remembering what Madison said in Federalist 62, which it was a very good guide for this Congress. I hope many of them read it. He said, there's no point in giving the American people a representative legislature if they pass laws so voluminous that no one reads them, or so frequently changed that a reasonable man can't know what the law is. Well, that's Obamacare to a T. When we get back, we're going to be talking with the man who knows what's happening in the world, from Iran to Indonesia, from Crimea to California. He knows exactly what the United States should be considering, pros and cons about the invasion of Crimea. He is Ambassador John Bolton, and I'm going to read you one quote. He said this at a breakfast speech on Saturday in New Hampshire. He said, "We see Secretary of State John Kerry being sent to London to negotiate with Russian Foreign Minister Sergey Lavrov." And then he said, "That's like sending a cupcake to negotiate with a steak knife." So When we get back, Ambassador John Bolton will be telling us exactly what he meant by that provocative statement. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram on Your Healthy Radio Addiction.
Call the Laura Ingram Show, 1-855-40-LAURA.
Welcome back, friends. This is Lieutenant Governor Betsy McCoy standing in for the voice of liberty, Laura Ingram, on Your Healthy Radio Addiction. And we've got Kathy from Virginia on the line. Kathy, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking that if you produce a long list of impeachable offenses against this president and don't take any action, I will go right through the roof. How many chances, how many felonies do I get listed before the police show up at my door? I think that would be a horrible, horrible mistake. If they're there, impeach the guy. If they ain't, shut up.
Well, I'm very glad you're expressing this viewpoint, and I thank you for your call. But, of course, impeachment is simply bringing him to trial. To convict him and remove him from office requires a two-thirds vote in the Senate. And predicting how the Senate would vote, well, we would have to expect that it would be pretty partisan the way it's been in the past. And so there aren't the votes there right now for a removal from office. But I do agree with you that it's already a long list. In fact, I was going to add another crime to the list, because just this last Friday night, the Obama administration slipped in new regulations in violation of the Constitution that expand the bailout for insurance companies provided in the Affordable Care Act. In other words, the law already said that insurance companies would be bailed out with taxpayer money if they lose money selling these Obamacare exchange plans. But then the administration changed the law, something they do not have the constitutional authority to do, and expanded the parameters of that bailout last Friday, didn't attract any attention because they released it Friday night. Who's sitting around waiting for new HHS, Health and Human Services regulations on a Friday night? But that's what they did to elude that kind of attention.
I still think if there is no action taken against this long list, that you can't tell me that a lot of senators, Democrats, who are trying to get reelected aren't going to scratch their heads and say, maybe I ought to look at this again. Harry Reid may not be willing to bring it up, but he's going to be up for election, too, one of these days.
Well, that's right. And the fact is, it's already discouraging to see how many Democratic members of Congress are putting this partisanship ahead of their sworn duty to uphold the Constitution. When I saw the president deliver his State of the Union message earlier this year, and he brazenly and brashly said, if Congress won't act, I have a pen and a phone, indicating that he would take action without Congress, the Democrats in the chamber stood up and applauded, forgetting that what he was really saying is, I'm going to steal your lawmaking authority and govern by fiat. That's really what that announcement meant. And he has done that in many areas, not simply with Obamacare, although many of his most obvious and brash violations of the Constitution pertain to Obamacare, but also in the area of environmental regulation, where his war against coal has been done largely through regulation because Congress wouldn't go along with it, and in the area of immigration law, where Congress refused to pass certain changes to the law, and so the president did those by executive fiat, by dicta as well. And so it is very discouraging to see that most members of Congress have not really stood up for the Constitution they're sworn to defend.
Because they haven't come close to re-election. Mary Landrieu would fold like a cheap suit. I believe there are many others the same way. When the chips are down, they're going to look around and say, wait a minute, can I support this guy or not?
Well,
is he going to be dragging my coattails or not?
Let's hope you're
That's
right.
That's what they care about.
You're absolutely right about that. That's what politicians care about. But thank you for calling, and call in again. I'd like to hear from you. We now have on the line the man, the expert, who knows what's going on in the world from Iran to Indonesia, from the Crimea to California. He is Ambassador John Bolton, former ambassador to the UN. And as I said earlier, he is the one who put his finger on it so aptly when he said, sending John Kerry to negotiate with the Russian foreign minister, Sergey Lavrov, is like sending a cupcake to negotiate with the steak knife. Welcome, Ambassador.
Hi, Betsy. How are you? Glad to be with you.
You're very glad to be with you. Well, let's get right to it. And now that the Crimea has been seized, are any borders of any country up for grabs?
Well, I think certainly within the space of the former Soviet Union, all of the former republics, now independent, have to be worried, given what's happened in Ukraine. Ukraine is the biggest prize of the former republics, and Vladimir Putin is so far essentially unopposed. So, and I don't think we're finished with Ukraine by a long stretch of the imagination. I think he still wants to get a government in Kiev that he can dominate. There may be further partitions, but I think in Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, even though they're NATO members, they need to worry. The Caucasus republics, the Central Asian republics, Moldova. Putin gave a speech to the Russian parliament yesterday that's really chilling when you read it, basically saying that Western sanctions efforts against Russia, Western efforts to promote democracy and civil society in Russia, he treats as aggression and will respond accordingly. So this is a leader who has a very strong sense of what he wants. I think he has weighed the costs and benefits. He certainly did in Ukraine. He's come up aces there, and I think he believes he's on a roll. And, you know, given the president we have in the White House, it's not hard to understand why he thinks that.
Well, many commentators have already pointed out that these sanctions don't appear serious. Some have called them worthless. Charles Krauthammer called them laughable, risible. What is your view?
Now, that's exactly right. Look, Russia has the eighth largest economy in the world. And what did the United States of America do in response to Russia's moving military forces across an international border, seizing a part of another country? We sanctioned 11 people by saying we wouldn't give them visas and we would freeze their assets in the United States. It's so disproportionate that I think, if anything, the continued weakness of America's response and the Europeans, let's spread the blame around here because their sanctions are just as weak, really is helping to persuade Putin that he might as well double down. He's got momentum. He's not facing opposition, not serious opposition from the West. So that's why I think when you listen to him before the Russian parliament talking about the fate of ethnic Russians or cultural Russians in these republics that used to be part of the Soviet Union, he is building the basis for further intervention elsewhere.
Well, it does appear as if President Obama has no stomach at all for confrontation. Is it true that although he froze the assets in the United States of 11 Russians, Putin was not one of them?
That's correct. It was actually 7 Russians and 4 Ukrainians, so it's even more of a series of pinpricks. And, you know, we've been talking about we and the Europeans about the possibility of freezing assets for weeks. So I think any Russian who knew this was a possibility was moving his assets. And the idea, and this was talked about seriously by European and American diplomats in leaks to the press over the past couple weeks, talked about the effect of denying visa applications to these named Ukrainians and Russians as having a real effect on it, because after all, their wives wouldn't be able to shop on Fifth Avenue and the great fashion streets of Europe. These people who were named couldn't care less about that sort of thing. Talk about a first world mentality that you know, maybe people in the State Department would be upset if they couldn't shop in Paris. But in Moscow, it doesn't affect their calculations.
It almost appears as if these sanctions were worse than no sanctions because they are so comic.
Well, that's a very good point. I mean, if you're going to respond in opposition to a move like the military intervention in Crimea, you've got to do it in a way that shows seriousness. And when you respond in a less than serious way, I do think it encourages people like Putin to believe that we're all bark and no bite. Nobody wants a military confrontation over this, but the weakness of the U.S. response, as I've said, I think invites further assertiveness, and it increases the risk of a miscalculation. This is a case where weakness invites further trouble, and where the risk of a miscalculation rises.
In terms of responses, Senator John McCain suggested offering military assistance of some sort to the Ukraine. Where do you stand on that issue?
Well, I would do that. I think there are a number of suggestions moving U.S. Military assets into the Baltic republics, Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, which are very vulnerable geographically to the Russians. I would go further. I think President Bush was right in 2008 to recommend to NATO that both Ukraine and Georgia be brought on a very definite, clear path to NATO membership. I think that would have sent a signal to Russia to keep hands off. We failed to do that, and 4 months later, Russia invaded Georgia, and we can see what's happening in Ukraine. I would go back to that. This is a matter not of economics, but of security. It's a matter of power. And Putin is demonstrating it, and we're not.
One last question on this issue, and that is China. In the United Nations Security Council, China abstained from condemning the Russian action. What should that tell us?
Well, I was a little surprised that China didn't veto along with Russia. I mean, an abstention is a way of trying to duck the issue. Obviously, they didn't join in the condemnation. They knew Russia was going to veto, so an abstention is kind of hiding in the tall grass. But if push came to shove, I think China is watching this crisis in Ukraine more carefully than any other country other than direct participants, because it has been making very, very aggressive territorial claims in the South China Sea and the East China Sea. And watching what happens in Ukraine, seeing American weakness, European weakness, I think this is going to factor into perhaps even more aggressive Chinese moves in the waters around its coast.
So we could be facing two bad actors instead of one.
Exactly. And even more than that, everybody watches everything the United States does. And weakness in one area, particularly in Europe, in the center of Europe, where the Cold War settlement is essentially being undone by Vladimir Putin, if neither America nor the Europeans has the will or the resolve to counter these moves, in more remote areas, I think our adversaries have recalibrated their policies. We're going to see more challenges to us and our friends and allies in the next couple of years.
Well, you've done an enormous public service in enlightening the public about what's going on and what the United States should be doing to stand tall for freedom and for our own national security. In the 30 seconds we have left, any thoughts on the Malaysian airplane mystery?
Well, I think you have to believe that the risk of terrorism is a very real explanation for what happened here. There's so much we don't know. There's a lot of conspiracy theorizing going on. But I have thought for quite some time that the U.S. government at the highest political level should have pushed harder to get deep into the center of this investigation. By allowing the Malaysians to lead, we've lost a lot of valuable time and valuable leads. And I think the U.S. really, this is another example of abdicating by the Obama administration.
Thank you so much, Ambassador. Thank you so much for joining us. When we get back, we've got Asher, Ed, and Mary on the line. We're going to be talking about hospital infections and what you can do to protect your family, your loved ones, if they're going into the hospital, and so much more on Obamacare and crises around the world. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram, your healthy radio addiction.
You're no good for me.
The Laura Ingram Show.
No good.
Call the Laura Ingram Show, 1-855-40-LAURA.
I said, Doctor, Doctor, Mr. MD, Doctor, now can you tell me what's ailing me, Doctor?
Welcome back, Bubba. This is Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York, standing in for the Voice of Liberty, Laura Ingraham. This is your Healthy Radio Addiction, and you can reach us at 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA, or you can tweet at Ingraham Angle or reach me at BetsyMcCoy.com. And we've got Asher from Michigan on the line.
Yes. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind, Asher?
Well, I've been trying to get this out there, and I think the world needs to know this formula, that what Obama's doing when he meant fundamentally transforming America is America has a formula, which is liberty first. And with liberty, you get productivity. And with productivity, you get wealth. And with wealth, you get independence. And with independence, you get freedom. And with freedom, you have the maximum social programs you can for those that need it, not those that want it. What he's done is flip this formula to those that want it, putting SP before L, which is liberty, and social programs reduce liberty, and that reduces productivity, reduces wealth creation, reduces independence, and reduces freedom, and has more social programs with less quality of care.
Asher, you have put your finger on it. That's an extremely intelligent and perceptive observation. Thank you for calling. We've got Mary from Michigan.
Hello. I wanted to call and tell you that I agree with the last caller that was talking about we need to come up with that list of offenses where Obama has abused his authority through his executive order or his overreach. And just because there's a two-third majority that's necessary in order to impeach him doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it and that it can't be done.
I agree with you entirely.
But remember that Obamacare was passed to begin with because there were six legislators who held out who did not want to vote for Obamacare because of the abortion part of the bill, and they held out and held out, and those six were persuaded to vote yes. Through an executive order that he wrote saying that our tax dollars wouldn't pay for abortions.
It was a lie. It was a lie, like all of the things that Obama says. He lies, lies, lies. But Mary, I'm so glad you wrote in support of that list. We've got to get that list out there. Thank you for being a patriot. It's really, really important. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for the great voice of liberty, Laura Ingraham. This is your Healthy Radio Addiction. When we get back, we're going to talk to Ed from Florida and hear a lot more about Obamacare and hospital infections, too.
Radio Addiction starts now.
Power to the people!
The Laura Ingraham Show.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Glad you stayed with me, Bubba. This is Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York State and author of Beating Obamacare 2014. Standing in for the Voice of Liberty, Laura Ingraham. You can reach us at 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA. You can tweet Laura at Ingraham Angle, and you can reach me at BetsyMcCoy.com. And we're going to have a very important guest in a moment, Greg Moore, who can tell us a lot about what Obamacare is doing to seriously ill people in New Hampshire, where this new health law has really pummeled patients. But first, I wanted to just say one thing about another personal passion, and that is preventing hospital infections. If you or someone you love is going into the hospital, listen up for a moment, because hospital infections kill more people in our country than all the cases of AIDS, plus all the cases of breast cancer, plus all the car accidents combined. It's really one of the largest causes of death in our country, and it's totally preventable through proper hygiene and procedures. And I started to realize what a terrible problem this was when I was Lieutenant Governor of New York State. So many people came to me with their health problems, but increasingly it was the same tragic story. Someone who had gone into the hospital even for the happiest reason, such as having a baby, and instead contracted a terrible infection. So when I left office, I founded the Committee to Reduce Infection Deaths, RID. And you can come up on our website, www.hospitalinfection.org, and get all the information you need to reduce your risk of a hospital infection. So I'm going to leave you with one tip, one thing you can do right now. If you're going to see someone you love in the hospital, forget the candies, forget the flowers, bring a canister of bleach wipes and wipe all the surfaces around your loved one's bed, the bed rails, the over-the-bed table, the call button, the IV pole, even that keyboard they tell you not to touch. Because, in fact, doing that can save your friend or loved one's life. It will reduce the most prevalent hospital infection by 79%. That's what research at the Mayo Clinic shows. So bring the bleach wipes and remove the germs that are lingering on all those surfaces around your loved one's bed. Now we have Greg Moore on the line. Greg, thank you so much for calling. Greg is with Americans for Prosperity, and he held a dinner last night in New Hampshire, the Live Free or Die state, at which several people who have been personally injured by Obamacare told their stories. Can you tell us what happened there, Greg?
Sure. Actually, this is our second in a series of events we're going to be having across the state, allowing people to tell the stories about how Obamacare has affected them. Last night, we had the CEO of a local hospital who, thanks to the fact that we have an Obamacare exchange with only one insurer in the exchange, thus a monopoly, has been cut out of the Obamacare exchange. So people in one of the larger communities in New Hampshire no longer have access to their local hospital if they buy a policy through the Obamacare exchange. And he had a chance to talk about how that's impacting him and his business in New Hampshire. And so that was really an eye-opening experience.
Greg, let's make it clear to our listeners that this insurance company that's monopolizing the Obamacare exchange in New Hampshire has eliminated access to 10 out of 26 hospitals. Am I correct?
That's absolutely right, Betsy. The Anthem Blue Cross Blue Shield, when they had an opportunity to bid for the business in the exchange, as they pointed out, they weren't sure they were going to be the only one, but they said that if they had lived with all the regulations and rules with Obamacare as it stood and had every single hospital in the exchange, they would have seen that their premiums go up by 30% to 40%. And they said, we can't sell a policy that no one wants to buy. I mean, that's just how the free market works. So they said, how are we going to be able to cut down that massive premium that was going to make buying a policy through the exchange completely unaffordable? And they said, okay, our strategy is going to be we're going to dramatically reduce the number of hospitals. And so some of the largest communities in New Hampshire do not have access to the local community hospitals. And so 10 of the 26 hospitals in the state are no longer in the Obamacare network. And one of the CEOs joined us last night at our meeting from Frisbee Hospital, which is in Rochester, New Hampshire. And so he had an opportunity to talk about how that's impacting people in his local community. We also had the owner of an automobile dealer who has 50 employees who is just facing an incredible amount of uncertainty based upon when the employer mandate kicks in, how big the employer mandate will be, what it will mean for his business, what it's going to mean for the cost in his business. He just has no idea. And he talked about some of the paralysis that he's feeling as a business owner about expanding his business and potentially adding jobs when he doesn't know what his economic future or the future of his business is going to look like.
Well, that's right, Greg, because businesses depend on the rule of law and being able to predict what the rules are going to be. And this president, by fiat, simply changes the rules day by day.
And that's absolutely right. The fact that business owners don't know what's going to happen is the worst thing going. As he said, I can deal with a rule one way or the other, but what I can't deal with is uncertainty. And that made a huge impact, I thought, talking about what it means for jobs and the economy, because that's still a critical issue. Obamacare is a huge issue, but jobs and the economy is also a critical issue. We also had a woman who owns a hair salon, and has had that business for 40 years. It's just an incredible job, being able to actually be in business for 40 years. That's a remarkable story. And she has between 15 and 18 employees. And she has to now think about, what about part-time, full-time, how am I going to provide insurance for people, her own personal situation where she's probably going to be losing her insurance coverage. So now she's in a situation where she's not sure whether to try to have her employees go into the exchange or look at potentially buying a group policy for them and what it means. And again, more uncertainty for business owners and what does it mean in terms of creating jobs and helping the economy. And finally, our fourth panelist was just a business management consultant who is dealing with the reality of trying to buy an individual policy. Now, one of the things that Obamacare, people know you can buy a policy to exchange. One of the things that is less well known is that because, thanks to Obamacare, if you're an individual and you want to buy a policy, you pretty much have to go to the exchange. You can't really go and buy a policy direct from an insurance agent anymore. That's been opportunities been taken away from him. Now, he lives in a community in Concord, New Hampshire, where if he goes to the exchange to buy a policy, the local hospital in Concord simply isn't available for him in network. So now he's dealing with the reality of being forced to buy through an exchange for a policy that he can't buy and get access to his local community hospital.
Well, that's
so
exactly...
These stories, I think, absolutely resonate with the public because we hear about numbers. We hear about 22,000 people having their policies canceled in the state. We hear about 20, 30% increases in premiums. But each one of those 20-plus thousand people, and everybody who's paying a higher premium, is a story. And when people hear those personal stories, that really starts affecting them and moving them towards action.
Well, Greg, you've done a great public service, you and Americans for Prosperity, and I want to thank you for coming on this morning, because what's happening in New Hampshire is unique, but in some ways, of course it is, but in other ways, sadly, we're seeing similar stories all around the country. We've got Philip from Florida on the line with his Obamacare story.
Yeah, I'm a healthy 63-year-old man, so I'm not eligible for Medicare. I have carried a health insurance policy for some years that was a very high deductible, $5,000 deductibles, all I could afford, and that cost me $330 a month. With Obamacare, received a letter from my insurance company that I was going to have to be canceled because it didn't meet the requirements.
You mean you couldn't keep your health plan if you liked it?
Right. So I went looking for an alternative. And what I found, being in Florida, we don't have a state exchange. So I went to the healthcare.gov. I won't even go into the nightmare that was. But once I was able to find out what I was able to get, an equivalent policy with an $8,000 deductible was going to cost me $580 a month, like that.
Wow, and that's a really big deductible, $8,000 deductible.
Huge deductible. But then my brother told me, well, wait a second. Don't you realize that you're eligible for, because of your income level, you're eligible for a subsidy? Mm-hmm. And I said, you're kidding me. He said, no, man, if you have such and such, go blah, blah. So I went back on to healthcare.gov and put in the information about my income and so forth and registered to find out what I was eligible for. I am now the proud owner of a new health insurance policy that cost me $98 a month. That's a savings of over $200 a month from my existing one, with a $600 deductible and a 90% payout. 90%
payout. Wow,
that's
impressive. So it must be a platinum plan.
Now wait. If I had not been able to have a subsidy, that plan was going to cost me $685 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the subsidy that I get, it only cost me $98. So now I should be a happy person because it's $98 a month. I'm saving off of my existing one. I no longer have the high deductible. But what really has me chagrined is the fact that the government is paying $550 a month for me to have a policy that I didn't want.
Yes.
I didn't want a 90% $600 deductible policy. I am a healthy person. I really don't go to the doctor. The only thing I've ever used it for or thought that I might use it for is catastrophic.
Well, you know, Philip, let me just jump in here and say you're a really honest man. And you're doing a public service by exposing this, because the fact is the money is being wasted. That's the sum total of what you're saying, right? You were happy with your old plan. You didn't ask the government to spend all this money on you, pushing you into a different kind of plan. Am I correct in that? That's your message?
Exactly. And so everybody says, well, why aren't you happy? You're getting a $98 a month policy. You should be overwhelmed with joy about Obamacare. I said, because how many millions or hundreds of thousands of people are like me that the government is spending this money on and they don't want it?
Exactly.
I didn't want that policy.
And thank you for calling, by the way. Thank you very much for calling, Philip. And at the same time, I see stories like Catherine Albrecht from New Hampshire, who tells me that if she had been in Obamacare when she developed her stage 3C breast cancer, she wouldn't have survived it. So after the break, we're going to take more Obamacare stories. We've got a lot of information for you on how you can protect yourself from Obamacare going forward. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram with your healthy radio addiction.
Swallow.
The Laura Ingram Show.
So good. Wait until the dust settles. You live. You
live. Call Laura now. 1-855-40-LAURA.
I got the shivers, I got the shakes. I'm burning up at 108. I'm sick as a dog.
Glad you stayed with me, friends. This is Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York State and author of Beating Obamacare 2014, standing in for the voice of liberty, Laura Ingram. You can reach Laura at Ingram Angle. And you can reach us at 855-40-LAURA. You can reach me at BetsyMcCoy.com. Remember when Senator Harry Reid called those ads about people suffering from Obamacare's consequences lies? Well, they aren't lies. In fact, what they are people with pre-existing conditions, seriously ill people, the very people that the president told us his health plan would help. And the bitter truth is that Obamacare plans aren't designed for healthy people. They're not, aren't designed for sick people. They're not good for sick people. The other day I was talking with a woman from New Hampshire I mentioned just before the break, Dr. Catherine Albrecht. She has stage 3 breast cancer. And when she was diagnosed, the doctors at her local hospital frankly told her to get her affairs in order. They couldn't help her. But she went to Dana-Farber Cancer Center in Boston and then to the Cornell Breast Cancer Center in New York, and she was able to survive and stop this cancer. But she said if she had had the Obamacare plans they're offering in New Hampshire when she was diagnosed, she'd be dead. That was her conclusion, because those plans wouldn't allow her to go to these centers of excellence around the country. Now we've got Gordon from Michigan on the line. Gordon, how are you?
Pretty good, Betsy.
Good. What's on your mind?
You're such a grand lady. Now, you know what? You celebrate Laura all the time, but you are a grand lady, because I don't know too many people that are that conservative for where you're from. You're a great person.
Well, thank you very much for calling.
And I'm not going to comment on anything political. I just want to comment on the aspects of everybody's behavior. You're a great person.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Gordon. I really appreciate hearing from you. You know, there was a story in the Fox News website about a man named Larry Basich, a 62-year-old Las Vegas resident. He was about to retire, and he bought one of those Obamacare exchange plans from United Healthcare back in November, and he paid his premium, unlike a lot of people who sign up or who are claimed to have signed up. And then in December, he suffered a massive heart attack. And guess what? The exchange can't find any record of his plan. So he's now faced with $407,000 in medical bills, and nobody's willing to pay them. So much for Obamacare. That story just ripped my heart out. I'm glad he survived his heart attack, but whoa, to be clobbered with those bills is pretty bad. We've got Roy from Texas on the line. Hello, Roy.
Hello, Betsy. I taped your discussion with Dennis Prager about Obamacare. I think it's a fabulous discussion. But I want to know how long you're going to hold back from advocating what I today would advocate for, and that is for all constitution-loving Americans to pay their bills for a month or two in advance, pack up and head for Washington for at least a two-week vigil, a protest, an action to stop the business of Washington, D.C. from proceeding any further until impeachment proceedings are brought against this so-called president.
You know, I like the way you think, Roy, and it's no mistake, it's no coincidence that you're from Texas. You're thinking big like a Texan. And let's hope at some point that the people already in Washington, the people that we've paid to represent us in Washington, will take more effective action to rein in this lawless president. Thank you for calling, Roy. We've now got JB from Texas on the line, and we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to hear what JB has to tell us. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingram, your healthy radio addiction, 855-40-LAURA. Glad to be with you, friends. This is Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York State and author of Beating Obamacare 2014, standing in for the voice of freedom, Laura Ingram. You can reach us at 855-40-LAURA, 855-40-LAURA. You can tweet Laura at Ingram Angle, and you can reach me at BetsyMcCoy.com. We've got a lot of callers lighting up the board, and I'm going to start with Barbara in South Carolina. Thank you for calling, Barbara.
Yes, Betsy, this is Barbara. Anyway, I agree with Roy, your last caller, but I say we should cut the money off. Anybody that needs to pay the IRS, the ones who's been snooping in on the conservative people, if they need to pay the government more money to spend, needs to hold their money, keep it for this stupid Obamacare, and united we stand. If we stand together and do this, not give them any more money to spend of ours, they can't put millions of people in jail.
Well, Barbara, I like the way you think, and of course I do agree with what Roy said, but we don't even have to risk withholding our taxes, because the fact is the people in Washington we elected have the power to deny Barack Obama funding. That's what James Madison explained to us in Federalist 56, that the power of the purse belongs to the elected representatives in Congress, and we've got to put more pressure on them to do their job to stand up for freedom instead of kowtowing to the president. I really liked what Roy said about capturing the capital for we the people. That is a great idea. Trucks, tractors. We've got to work on this, and I'm going to be back to you all with an idea for, I'm not going to call it Occupy Washington because that sounds too left-wing. Capturing the capital is more in line with our values. But thank you very much for calling, Barbara. We've got Roger from California.
Yes, but this is a point I want to make about Ukraine. This crisis, the only way out, peaceful way out, was what Russia did. If we had not done that, then there would have been a civil war in Ukraine. And you know what happened to Yugoslavia when it split? The war was going on for more than a year or 2 years. 100,000 died. There was a lot of ethnic cleansing on both sides. And there were refugees all over the place. So do you want the same thing to happen in Ukraine? I don't think so. And then about the sanctions on Russia, it's not going to work. It works for small countries like maybe Grenada. It didn't even work for Iran. Iran has survived for 30 years. Sanctions on big countries like Russia, China just wouldn't work. And Russia supplies gas to EU through the pipeline. They will just cut it off. And the EU already is in bankruptcy with Greece and Italy and Spain, Portugal. If they don't get gas, Germany will also go bankrupt. That's all. And they cannot sell any of their cars to the rich Russian people there. So many. Russia have invested in London and other countries in real estate. There is a lot of problems.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you for calling and expressing your viewpoint. I don't agree with your viewpoint that civil war was inevitable in Crimea and the Ukraine, the rest of the Ukraine. But that's the party line that Putin is using. Tom from Massachusetts, thanks for calling.
Hi, Betsy. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like to say you do a great job filling in for Laura. You really are articulate and very, very knowledgeable, and I enjoy you filling in.
Thank you.
Betsy, the last caller there about the $400,000 operation that now he owes the government or whatever. Betsy, the problem with this whole healthcare thing is they can now make up any number they want on what an operation costs, whether it's the cost of delivering a baby or a heart operation, because there's soon going to be no competition but them. So it's a way of them like avoiding Proposition 2.5 in any local town, city, or anything, because they can make up any number they want for health care costs that they provide for their union workers.
I'm so glad you called, Tom. You're absolutely right. Obamacare, the studies already show, are not increasing competition. They're smothering competition and eliminating the choices that many Americans enjoyed and that we'd like to offer to all Americans. Thanks a million for calling.
Thank you, Betsy.
We've got JB from Texas, and he has thoughts on Benghazi. Boy, I'm glad you brought that one up.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks for taking my call. I've been trying to call in for quite some time and get this off my chest.
Well, I apologize. It's taken so long.
That's okay, ma'am. But I don't know why Congress never asked this question to Hillary or Obama. If I'd have been interrogating Hillary, first question I'd asked her, I said, if your son or daughter was the ambassador over there, would you have sent help? And I would have put her on the hot seat. I think she couldn't have stood that. She would have just got it walked out.
Well, she certainly wouldn't have said, what difference does it make, right?
That's correct. And I think Obama needs to be asked that, and Hillary both. And I think the Republicans could run with this and use that in their favor during the elections coming up.
It's a crime that those questions haven't been answered. And I'd like to know where the president was the night of Benghazi. Why wasn't he in the Situation Room looking at this moment by moment? Because there were Americans in our government watching the attack as it occurred. Why wasn't the president one of them? Thank you so much for calling, JB.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And now we've got Jim from Florida who has an opposing viewpoint. Welcome, Jim. We welcome all viewpoints.
Hey, let me ask you a question. Let's just say that Obama decides he wants to invade a fanatic Muslim country, okay, and to win hearts and minds and promote democracy into that country. And he spends $4 billion a month on that operation, that campaign, for 10 years, okay? What do you think that would do to the country?
I see where you're going. You're suggesting that maybe it's George W. Bush who should have been impeached, right, instead of President Obama? Is that what you're suggesting?
Right, it's a fact. It's not a suggestion. It's a fact.
Well, thank you for your opinion. I know that many people share your view that presidents have seized too many, quote, war powers, rather than consulting Congress more frequently on waging war without declaring war. But now we're in a new administration. That's history. and we have to protect our Constitution from the arbitrary dictates of a president who is seizing power not only in the field of foreign affairs, where presidents customarily have tried to be very authoritative as commander-in-chief, but in fact, he's trying to run our domestic policies as well without the consultation or approval of Congress. Thanks for calling, Jim.
Who cleans up the mess?
Thanks for calling, Jim. There is an issue that I wanted to raise with everybody before we run out of time, and that is that America is poised to surrender to the bullies or the potential bullies on another issue. And here's an area where all of us can take action and inundate Congress with phone calls, because the Obama administration is about to give up American oversight of the internet. This is a decision made by the Commerce Department, but obviously with the knowledge and approval of the White House. And the danger here is that countries that don't value freedom, the Chinese government, the Russian government, the Iranian government, could actually move in and try to eavesdrop, seize, block access to internet communications. We know that the internet has been incredibly important, even when people strive for revolution and freedom in their own countries, and that non-freedom-loving countries in the past have tried to tamp down on internet communication. Before Russia invaded Georgia in 2008, the Russians shut down Georgian servers. So, largely, what I'm saying here is that we need to contact members of Congress to act on this issue. It's not clear that the president can do this by himself. Congress could act to continue the American role as bodyguard of the internet. This is a really important issue. It's almost impossible to overemphasize the importance of the internet in our future freedom, future commerce, and future world communications. But once again, Obama is assuming the dangerous position of multilateralism and leading from behind, and future internet freedom could be at stake here. We've got Tom from Michigan on the line.
Good morning. Good morning. Just a quick comment talking about stifling competition with Obamacare, and you had a caller previous that there was a bill, what, $400,000 somebody owed, is that correct?
Mm-hmm. A Las Vegas man named Larry, right?
Yeah, Larry, right. The question we always have to watch, though, to be careful, is, you know, I could get a bill from a private practitioner for, you know, $100,000, but in reality, reimbursement may be even a third of that or a half of that. You know what I mean?
You're right, but guess what? Larry couldn't pay $100,000 of that. He was just overwhelmed. Here he is lying in a hospital bed recovering from a heart attack, and suddenly he's told he doesn't have health insurance when he signed up and paid the premium.
I agree with you 110%. I'm just saying, when the numbers get so high, everybody goes crazy about it and thinks that private practice physicians are earning those kinds of dollars. They aren't. Reimbursement is horrible. Obamacare is horrible. What they reimburse from Obamacare are putting private practitioners out of business.
I am glad you called on this issue, because it is true. Doctors are getting paid less and less, even though the president tried to vilify doctors. That was a major strategy for him to get this law through to begin with, claiming that doctors were earning too much. They were taking out kids' tonsils just for the money, amputating feet just for the money, all of which is untrue. I'm really glad you called. We've got Gladys in South Carolina.
Hi,
Gladys.
Hi, Betsy.
Hello, Gladys.
Hi, Betsy. Oh, it's such a pleasure to talk to you. I just think you're the greatest.
Well, that's a nice call, Gladys.
I love to listen to you.
Thank you very much.
I'm sorry. I just got a something in my throat for a second. I need a couple of answers to a couple of things that we're talking about today. Hold on a second, please. I'm sorry.
Okay, take a big deep breath.
Happened is
okay.
the night of Benghazi, I was watching television, and I saw a clip at the White House where somebody said to someone there, you know, about Benghazi, and it was in the White House, and somebody said, "Oh, I'm not going to wake the president up. He just went to sleep."
Oh, Gladys, we've got to take a break in a second. You are raising an important issue, though. We do want to know what happened that night and where the president was and how attentive he was to this critical life and death issue. And thank you again for calling. It's a pleasure to have you call into the show. This is Betsy McCoy standing in for Laura Ingraham at your Healthy Radio Addiction. And look forward to coming back with you after the break with some more calls and some final thoughts from me on the importance of freedom and what we need to do in this next national election to repeal Obamacare, rein in this government spending, and elect people to the United States Congress who believe in our Constitution. Stay with us.
The Laura Ingraham Show. Call the Laura Ingraham Show, 1-855-40-LAURA. It's gonna work, if you can get it. It's
gonna work, if you can get it. Welcome back, Bubba. So glad you're still with me. We've got Gerald from North Carolina on the line. This is Betsy McCoy, former Lieutenant Governor of New York State, author of Beating Obamacare. Welcome, Gerald. What's on your mind?
All right, I'd just like to say that I think it's time all true Americans that were born here stand up against this government and demand that everybody from the president on down to the lowest public worker get paid minimum wage. Not only will that, and stripping all the fancy benefits that they're allowed but nobody else is, that would not only help America out, but would help cut the deficit.
Thank you for that call, Gerald. That's an interesting idea. Jay in Colorado.
Hey, Betsy, this is Jay. It's nice to talk to you. I have 2 points. I feel like that a politician ought to be audited going in and out of office and the extra money put to a good use for the country. And I
like
that
one. Let's go. And I see you're also in favor.
I don't know who's going to do it, though.
Right. I also see you're in favor of term limits.
I'm in favor of term limits, definitely. And I think we should have a popular vote to vote them out of office anytime we want.
A referendum. Recall.
Also,
recall. That's right. Recall is a really great tool of democracy. I agree with recall, Jay. That's a very good one. You know, Jay's got the right idea. I know we're closing up soon. But I just want to say, Jay, you understand what the framers had in mind. A government by the people and for the people. And let me just say, as we're closing, it's been a privilege to stand in here for Laura today, that we are in the fight of our lifetimes because our health care, our access to our doctors and hospitals are at risk. Our fundamental constitutional liberties are under attack. And our government, much of it seems to have been hijacked by people who don't share our values. This fight to defeat Obamacare is the fight of our lifetimes, because if you're seriously ill, the best place to be is in the United States. A woman diagnosed with breast cancer here has a 95% chance of survival. Over 90%, I should say, close to 95%. In Europe, her chances are less than 80%. You do the math. That means she's twice as likely to die. And if you have an incurable condition, this is the nation of hope where the cures are developed. Since 1950, the United States has won more Nobel Prizes in medicine and physiology than the entire rest of the world combined. We have to defend that great American record. America, the city on the hill, the leader in medicine, in government, in freedom. Thank you so much for joining me today. This is Betsy McCoy signing off for Laura Ingraham and the Voice of Liberty. This is your Healthy Radio Addiction. Remember, freedom isn't free. It's up to you and me.